Welcome to the newest Fairest Love podcast, Single, Not Stalled, Pursuing Sanctity in Your Singleness. This podcast is for Catholic women who find themselves living the single life, whether it's by choice, vocation, or circumstance. Here, we believe that this is not just a waiting period, but a season rich with purpose, growth, and grace. Join your hosts, Monica and Katie Hinderer, two sisters navigating the single life from different perspectives, as we dive into conversations about faith, friendship, personal growth, and finding joy in the everyday. Let's embrace this extraordinary journey together. Part two. Rushing woman syndrome. I didn't think this was going to go, but like we hardly even got into it in the last episode. So we had to do part two. Gosh, it could go to part three or part four.
Well, I think we shared a lot of personal kind of stories and anecdotes, which I think, as uncomfortable as that is for me, I think it's so important in that, you know, part of our mission with this podcast is to help women feel belonging, like that they are seen and heard, right? They're not alone in this journey. And so part of doing that is kind of sharing our personal experiences. And then, you know, additionally, just giving y'all resources. So that's why this is kind of turning into a part two, because I think we shared a lot and kind of like unpacked and processed, like, what is rushing woman syndrome? How do we fall into that, given like that we're a particular demographic? And now we're going to talk about, how do you get out of that?
Yeah. It's funny. I was thinking about it in between part one and part two. We had a couple hours and I was thinking like most of the friends I know, and this could also be because I attract people who are similar to me, but like I can only think of one friend of mine who I would not consider.
All your friends are straight hustlers.
Yeah. Like a lot of my friends are, and a lot of the employees that I've hired are straight hustlers. Like I have one friend who like will get home from work. She's a nurse. She'll get home from work and she'll like curl up on the couch and she'll just read a book and like be really content and then like go to bed and like, wait. And I'm always like, what? I mean, she's got a lot of friends and stuff like that, but yeah, I she's the only one I can even think of in my life.
I recently heard that if you like to relax to true crime, that it's a sign of a dysregulated nervous system because it's
100% like, me
threatening. And I was like, oh, I feel personally offended by that. Like, don't tell me my true crime is not okay.
Most of the books I read are like suspense or thrillers or
So if you didn't listen to last week's episode, go ahead, pause, go tune in, because you're gonna want to be caught up with kind of what we're talking about and what is rushing woman syndrome and why is it a big deal. But we ended last episode with talking about step one, which is awareness. And I actually love that we cut it there because it gave all of our listeners time to actually really think about and grow in self-awareness and recognizing and understanding the signs and symptoms of your rushing woman syndrome and what that looks like in your life. So Katie, I know you kind of shared in the last episode, but kind of what awareness have you kind of come to of this rushing woman syndrome in your life? Maybe we can kind of start there.
Sure. I mean, I think it was interesting, like reading the book and then reading the Heal Your Nervous System book too. I was like, oh, me, check, check, check. We were laughing because I was like, yes, all the things. But I think my biggest way of pointing this out or me seeing this is migraines. So I've always had migraines since high school. I've been a hustler since high school, so not really shocking that would be the case. And at certain times in my life, they're worse or they're better. And I do a lot to really help them be lessened. And they've become much better in the last, I would say, 2 years or so, but I still get them
not a lot. I love that you're sharing this with our listeners, because what you're speaking to is that your body was trying to communicate with you.
Yeah.
And for many years, you weren't listening or you struggled to understand or interpret like what that meant. Mm-hmm. And so now when you get a migraine, it's probably like this really interesting like, oh, little like light bulb or little like alarm bell where it's like, hey, maybe you're like rushing too much.
Yeah.
And maybe like, so it's a good like moment of pause and reflection for you.
It is. And it's interesting because I like this will often happen and then it will force me to think like, well, now, okay, I used to get migraines so bad that I'd have to be in bed and it would like force me to slow down. Right. Now I'm better able to kind of regulate them or maybe even notice them before I get to that stage. But I think sometimes it can be hard, and I'm sure people can relate to this. Like you feel so overwhelmed, or you feel like you have a lot on your plate, or maybe even you're not telling yourself you're overwhelmed, but you just look at your to-do list and you're like, dang, this is going to take a while. And you think, I can't take a break. Like, I can't slow down, right? Because like, I got to get all these things done. So for me, one of the things that I do that kind of helps is sometimes I think like, okay, what would give me more peace right now?
and I do that thing. So mm-hmm. sometimes, like, there's things on your to-do list that, like, are going to always be there or whatever. And then there's things on your to-do list that, like, hover, if that makes sense.
They're weighty.
Yeah. So, like, we traveled a bunch, and I got home and, like, hit the ground running. And, like, I had not unpacked my suitcase. This is, like, one of the things I'm just, like, going, and, like, to unpack my suitcase takes a lot. And I realized I had a migraine the other day, and I realized, like, actually, I think, and I was like, oh, maybe I'll go take a nap or, like, go to bed early. And then I was like, no, I think what would give me more peace and alleviate my head a little bit more is if I just conquered the suitcase and put the suitcase away. And I did that, and it gave me a lot of peace because, like, my room then looked better, more relaxing. I probably was able to sleep better when I wasn't sleeping in the clutter of this half-opened, exploded suitcase, if that makes sense.
No, 100%. Yeah, I think one of the things as I was reflecting on this awareness piece, right, of, like, can I tune in and pay attention? And one of the things I worked with my own therapist on when I first got sick and just started reevaluating my life, one of the things was recognizing that I multitask everything.
Yep.
Everything. Like, I will sometimes even, I used to, I don't anymore. I used to even do a workout to a podcast, like an informational podcast, not like a fun, relaxing podcast, but like, I have a client going through XYZ. Like, maybe I can find, like, a little podcast and I can be doing this and that. Or I would be writing my clinical notes while watching a show, like a comedy.
Yeah.
And it got to this point where I actually realized a lot of those things increased greater frustration in my life because I didn't feel as though I was enjoying or doing either one well.
Yeah,
like, I didn't feel like my workouts were as restorative, and I didn't feel like the show was as relaxing because I was trying to pair it with other things. And so I worked really hard at moving towards, to the best of my ability, like, singular focused tasks and being okay with that, and actually, like, coaching myself through and being like, your notes will be done faster and you'll feel more accomplished or your show will be more enjoyable if you just do that and do that well.
It's interesting because in the Heal Your Nervous System book, she actually talks about this, like, we need to stop multitasking. But I think too, in our culture and our society, like, we're told women multitask really well. Right? Men are bad at it. Women are good at it, right? Like, you've probably even seen the reels of, like, asking a man to, like, cut out a Christmas tree.
Those are some of my Facebooks.
Like, and then also tell the story of, like, how you met your wife. And they, like, literally can't. And they're like, keep cutting. And they're like, and they take, like, one cut and then they pause and they go back to the story. Like, they just can't do it. But women are told we can. And I think we hear that as we must. Right. And it's true. Like, this is absolutely me. And this is one of the things in 2025, after reading this book, I'm really going to try and focus on, is not doing the two things at once. So, you know, like, I will clean the house and listen to a podcast simultaneously, or I will work out and be listening to a podcast. I will walk the dog and be listening to a book on tape. I will whatever. I will have 500 tabs open on my computer for all the things. And now I'm trying to be really focused and, like, yeah, maybe I'm going to walk the dog and, like, listen to some, like, music, but maybe I'm not listening to a podcast to, like, grow in knowledge during that time. Right. Yeah, things like that. And, like, and I think sometimes it's okay. Like, I was doing dishes the other day and I was listening to an audiobook. And I don't, like, that's not the worst thing in the world. But
no, because it's true. Like, women do hold that capacity to be able to hold many things at once. But the challenge here is, like, how, if that's the norm, maybe that's part of the problem. Or if you are someone who is kind of always a little bit on edge, one of the techniques is to reduce the amount of times you have to feel like you're on edge or your attention is split. So that's actually step two. So step one is awareness, and step two is regulation. And regulation is simply implementing techniques and practices that bring your nervous system back into balance. And so I think this is so, and I want to really emphasize this because I think this is kind of a misconception with when people say, like, re-regulating their nervous system or, like, pop psychology. So I want to kind of clarify here, your nervous system is meant to be agile,
right?
It's meant to be responsive. So, you know, when I have clients and stuff, and their goal is like, I don't want anxiety. And I'm like, well, that's not the goal. Like, anxiety is not bad. It has its form and function. We just have to get it back into a healthy response. When we talk about re-regulating one's nervous system, it just means, can I kind of, when it turns on, can I help it turn back off so that in my states of calm, it's calm. And in my states of intensity or in my states of unrest, it responds accordingly. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what we're talking about here. So this is why if the default is always multitasking or always being on edge or always racing, we want to give that nervous system time to kind of settle back down. So if you're going to do something relaxing, do something relaxing.
Right.
Right. We don't have to pair it with other things because that's what's going to keep, it's one of the things that can keep kind of our nervous system a little like on edge.
And I think for some of us, like if you're like me, that's really hard, right? To just like relax, to not do something with something else, right? Like I very rarely I'm going to watch a TV show or a movie unless I'm doing something else simultaneous, right? And like learning how to do that is really difficult.
Right. Until you noticed. So that's why awareness is first. Right. I like recognize the autopilot in the things I was in. So now when I sit down, I have a choice I can make. I can choose to multitask or I can choose to focus on singular tasks.
That's true.
Or even thinking about exactly what you were talking about earlier, Katie, when you were saying kind of taking a step back and pausing for a second and assessing what is my best next step or what do I need to feel better currently? And it may be a nap or it may be cleaning. And unless we're willing to be like reflective on that and kind of like look at and say like, what's really weighing on me or what's really like grinding those gears? We're going to have a hard time knowing which techniques and practices to implement, right? Because sometimes it's going to be as simple as re-regulating in that, like, kind of bringing me back to a sense of calm is going to be as simple as some of my breathing techniques.
Sure.
And then it may be a little bit more complicated and I may need to kind of, like, pause for a while and kind of reflect on, like, what feels like it's pushing those buttons.
Sure. I think, too, one of the things as you're talking, I think it's good to keep in mind, for some of us, we're pretty good at noticing when we're doing stuff like this. And for others, like myself, we're not good at it. So I was thinking, even like, if I sit down and I'm like, okay, I'm going to watch something, like I'm going to watch a movie or I'm going to watch a TV show or whatever, right? I will notice that like partway through, I'll like pick up my phone and then I'll also be scrolling on Instagram, which I think, unless we're super cognizant of, like that is a multitasking thing that further contributes to this like rush of like, I can't miss stuff. So like, I got to be on Instagram, but I also got to be watching, you know, the TV show that everyone told me I need to see or that kind of a thing. And so being really aware of that. And then also to your point, one of the things that I do, especially when I'm feeling really overwhelmed at times, and I've encouraged people on my team to do this as well. When they're like, I don't know, I just have so much on my plate. I will sit down in quiet with pen and paper, not with my computer, not with my phone, and I will write down all the things that I have to do, all the things that in a normal week I'm doing, whatever that is, the dishes, but then also all the stuff I'm doing for my business, et cetera, et cetera. And then what I do is I go through that list and I highlight the things that absolutely, positively, I am the only one who can do, right? There's very few things like that, but like my prayer, I can't offset my prayer to a virtual assistant, right? Like I need to be the one doing that. Certain client-facing things, I am the CEO, I need to be the one that does that.
Right.
But then I look at all the other things and I say, okay, which of these can I give to someone else, right? Like what can I offload to ease things for me? And that has been so helpful because I think often when we're in that rat race and we're like spiraling, we think like, I have to be doing this all. I have to be, I'm the only one who can do this. And like, sure, maybe someone's not going to do it as great as you, but someone else can do it.
Yeah. I like this idea of, we could do a whole episode on this topic, but like, what is good enough? And we're going to be okay with that. Yeah. And that is like, oh my gosh, I'm sure some of our listeners like at like the thought of like letting something lie that is good enough. Mm-hmm. But sometimes we forsake the good in pursuit of perfection and then we have nothing.
Yeah.
And so sometimes we have to be able to call a spade and say, do you know what? This is good enough. And I'm going to walk away.
Yeah. This is that phrase, the best is the enemy of the good.
There you go.
And exactly. Like if we're just constantly pursuing the best, sometimes good is good enough and that's fine. And that doesn't mean we're doing a crappy job.
No.
Right? It just means like our time is limited and so are our resources.
Absolutely. So some other things that help re-regulate or kind of balance out that nervous system after it's been maybe kind of on edge. So like thinking about like maybe you just got out of a really intense meeting with your boss. It didn't go the way maybe that you wanted it to. And so you're like, you're kind of on edge and you're noticing that or you're I don't know, you had a really long day at work and you come home and you're just like, man, I'm just like still wired, or I just sort of feel just like absolutely kind of beat up. So I would say anything that really engages the five senses is going to be really great. Mm. So some of the examples they give in the book, and then some other things that could be therapeutically beneficial would be like weighted blankets, right? That's tapping into our, like the sensory of touch. I'm a big fan of holding cold things. If you hold something too hot, you'll burn yourself. So something cold, right? Because it pulls. So like if we hold ice cubes, or we slowly drink a really cold glass of water, what it's doing is it's like really pulling us back into our body. And we're engaging a lot of the senses. Or we listen to like really calming music. We engage in an exercise that's slower, right? So we're like, you know what, I'm just gonna like dim the lights and do some stretches. Phenomenal. So the point is that we're slowing down and we're tuning in. Intense exercise or intense other things are going to like, yeah, maybe kind of shake the day off, but that's because it's like hitting into that fight or flight. Mm-hmm. And we just want to work towards the opposite of that.
So this is interesting because in my business early on, when I was like trying to get the business up and running, which is a really stressful time for an entrepreneur and all of that kind of stuff, I kind of accidentally turned Friday into what I call my creative day. And 9 times out of 10, I basically spend Friday hiking in the woods, even in the winter. But I think it was that, which I probably realized, but didn't realize like what exactly it was doing for me. But like it uses all the five senses, right? You're out, you're walking, you're seeing all this beautiful nature, or just the gray snowy nature that's out now, right? You're smelling things, you're touching things. It's been so restorative to me that it's now, my whole team knows Friday's my creative day. I'm not in the office. Most of my clients know that it's not a day. I don't take any meetings that day, as a way to really help restore. And sometimes I can't do that because like, whatever, you've got deadlines. But for the most part, like I try really hard to hit that when possible.
So I love that because you just automatically moved right into stage three that they talk about in the book, which is restoration. And so it's okay. So I know what's going on. I know how it's showing up in my body and in my life. I'm able to address that with skills and techniques to help me start to re-regulate, to find calm. And then the restoration process is just practices focused on enhancing that resilience and promoting well-being and that long-term health. And so this is where we see our sleep hygiene, our nutrition, our physical activities, connection to social supports. Even for some people who are extremely dysregulated or who have like trauma backgrounds and stuff like that, like therapeutic interventions. And so you may be seeing a therapist or participating in like, you know, EMDR and other forms. And then they even talk about play and creativity, that there's a side of us that continues to need to like play and be creative and have that type of expression in our life. So this is sort of thinking about what do I do and how can I implement long-term sustainable daily routines and practices in my life that promote well-being.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting. I think if you start tapping into things that you're doing that you're like the hiking thing, like I was doing it and I couldn't tell you why, but I knew it was really good. Right. And other people are like, I can't believe you hike every Friday. And I'm like, yeah, it's what I do. And like for a while I felt guilty about it. And then after a while I was like, I don't feel guilty about this at all. Right. But if you think of those kinds of things, there probably are some practices you have in your life that maybe you don't feel, you feel maybe guilty about, maybe you don't do that often, but like deep down, you're like, actually, I think this is restorative to me, right? Or like, I picked up watercoloring. I'd never watercolored in my life, but suddenly I felt this like urge to watercolor a couple years ago. And so I asked for a watercolor kit for Christmas. And that too is like a really restorative thing. And I realized when I first started it, I was doing it maybe with like soft music on in the background, but like nothing. And then after a while, it was like losing its joy and I couldn't figure out why. And I realized I was doing it while like also watching a show or doing something else, like listening to a podcast. And I think it was just furthering this rushing, this multitasking, as opposed to being restorative.
What started us calm. And the thing is, for right now, these calm practices and these things in your life are going to feel unfamiliar and uncomfortable, but.
And like a waste.
Sure. And part of this is just trusting the process that it's unfamiliar. It's not unsafe.
Right.
It's just unfamiliar. And a lot of times we are creatures of habit. We like what we know. And so it's just going to take a little bit of time to adjust instead. Right. And you may find yourself kind of falling back into old patterns, right? Like Katie was saying, she fell back into this pattern of multitasking because the rest in and of itself felt wasteful or something was missing. And so unless we're tuning into that awareness at all times of kind of why am I doing what I'm doing, then some of the practices may be a little bit harder to implement.
Sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. And then I think kind of really thinking about, and we will be doing a whole episode on this in the future, but just the importance of our food and our hygiene in general, that of course, if you are running on low food, no food, poor food, no water, your body starts to send distress signals. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, a lot of times, those distress signals mimic mm-hmm. anxiety-like symptoms, stress symptoms, depression-like symptoms, because your body's trying to communicate with you, like, hey, like, we're not getting what we need.
Right.
And we're not always self-aware enough. We think, oh my gosh, like, something's wrong, but it has to be this big existential thing. And really, it's like, you need water and probably some protein mm-hmm. And maybe less coffee mm-hmm. or maybe not as much alcohol. And so forth. So kind of thinking about what does my sleep and nutrition and water intake even mm-hmm. look like? Because the healthy patterns in those areas will start to create sustainable change in your life.
Yep, absolutely. So what's part four or stage four?
Connection, which tune into our episode on relationships or friendship. We actually had an episode mm-hmm. on friendship, I should say. But really fostering relationships and social connection support our nervous system health. And this is like, I think this just really strikes at the core mm-hmm. of the way God made us.
Yeah.
He made us to be with one another, in community with one another, in communion with Him. And so we are social creatures. We're social right. beings.
Yeah.
And we live and die by our connection to others.
I love when science proves what our faith tells us. You know, like so often it's things like that, that you're like, oh yeah, how funny. You need yeah. people. Yeah, duh. Right? Even in the Don't Die documentary that we talked about a couple episodes back, like the one thing he's like, I realize we're social creatures. And like when my son moves out, like I'm really not going to have anyone. And they're like, do you have a plan? And he's like, no. But and like it was really sad. But then he was like, actually, and he ended up making this like meetup for other people who are in this Don't Die community. But like they went for runs together and it would like gave him a lot of meaning and purpose. And I was like, yeah, because we have this inner need, this inner desire for communion with others. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's something that, and everybody listening to this, like, can attest to that they've mm-hmm. probably had an experience with someone who's kind of that, like, life-giving friend or that life-giving person that when sure. they leave an interaction with them or they leave time with them, they're feeling restored.
Sure.
And they're feeling good. And there's something that's regulating about that person. And so we really want to foster those connections and really build them up in our life. And simultaneously, the people who are draining mm-hmm. and the people who are, like, we leave every interaction with them super distressed and so forth, maybe that's something to consider. Right? What role does this person play in my life? What role do they need to play in my life? If they're not able to leave my life, how can I best support myself and my nervous system
sure.
in engaging in, you know, because I think we don't want to underestimate the power that other people have in our lives.
I think, yeah. And I think, you know, pop culture will tell us like, well, just get rid of them. Like, you don't need them, blah, blah, blah. But like, who knows? Maybe you do need them. They might be your sister or your mom or whatever. Right? And I mean, obviously there's different degrees of this, but sometimes too it's just also knowing that time spent with them is going to be maybe good but also difficult mm-hmm. or draining, and therefore like having a plan in place yeah. for like after or before in order to care for yourself, in order to re-regulate, in order to whatever, right? So maybe you need, you know, like for instance, I'm thinking like I most summers like I would help run summer camps, like leadership camps for girls. But I know at the end of that, I would always have a migraine. And it wasn't because I didn't love the camps. Like I loved the camps and I loved giving in that way. But like it's just really draining mm-hmm. for an introvert mm-hmm. to extrovert for 5 days,
yeah.
right, with 100 people. And to like run the thing and whatnot. And so I just knew. And so like I just worked it into the plan that like as soon as camp was over, I like went and crashed for like 36 hours, slept a ton, right? Spent a little bit of time just in nature with me, you know, and that kind of thing. And then I came back like restored.
Yeah.
But if I didn't know that and I was just like then ran into the very next thing, I mean, which I didn't know for a long time, which is how I then ended up getting migraines and I'd be like in bed for days afterwards because I had no idea what was going on. And yeah, so.
All the things. But so this last step, which I actually think is going to be a good thought exercise or homework. I mean, we've given our listeners so much to kind of think about already, but something for us to think about and take back next time is this last idea of expansion. So how can I take these practices and skills that I'm learning and apply them to other areas of my life?
Okay.
So I think that could be something really interesting to think about. Like, how can I take these regulation techniques and these things and apply them to areas maybe that I didn't think of before, or implement new skills in different, you know, facets of my life?
Yeah. I think too, for anyone who's listening, like, and they're like, oh, I'm not at the expansion stage yet. Maybe your thought exercise and your homework is a little bit like, okay, what am I going to do this week that's going to help regulate a little bit more? What am I going to stop multitasking? Maybe it's as simple as that is the first question, right? Like, what am I going to do for that? Or how am I going to put myself out in nature or out using my senses a little bit better? Like, coming up with some small practice like that before you're ready to expand this into other areas. Yeah,
I would pick no more than 5.
Yeah, and even that, like in the book, maybe, the Heal Your Nervous System book, she's like, don't do this all at once. If you're a rushing woman, she doesn't use the word rushing woman because it's someone else's, but she's like, if you're like this, you're going to want to do it all at the same time. Don't.
Yeah.
Not the point.
She recommends weeks on each of these practices we've talked about, like weeks of awareness and scoping out yourself in that landscape.
She said it takes 2 to 4 years to really re-regulate. Well, to fully regulate. And I was like, okay.
And these are the people who are like, something stressful happens and they like have panic attacks and literally freeze. So like to the extreme level. But, you know, to which I say, like, when people get really, you know, that's probably one of the number one questions I get asked as a therapist is, how long is this going to take?
Sure. Of course. I'm like, we want to know. I mean, again,
I can't answer that.
Society, we're like, go, go, go.
But I think one of the caveats or one of the things I always mention in that space is that, you know, the work of oneself is a work of a lifetime.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And so this is, we're never done. We're always going to be working on being the best version of ourselves and regulating and healthy and optimal and all of these things. And so part of that is, can I see the process as the goal and just realize that I am a forever learner and a forever work in progress. And that is a beautiful thing.
Yeah. And then I think it's going to take time, right? Consistency, but over time. Yeah. We want, just like for everything, we want the results now, but that's like not how it works. You can't just like roll up to the McDonald's drive-through of life changes and have a regulated immune system or auto, you know, like, and just be like done. Like, that's not how that works.
Well, that's it for this week on Single Not Stalled. We hope this episode gave you new insights and a renewed sense of purpose in your daily life. Wherever you are in your journey, remember that God is with you, and this season is filled with opportunities to grow, flourish, and make an impact. If you're loving this podcast, please take a moment to rate and review it. It helps more women like you find this community. And don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Join us on social media, on Instagram at singlenotstalled, or shoot us an email at singlenotstalled@gmail.com. We'd love to hear your thoughts and ideas. Until next time, keep living fully and walking boldly.